Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. We've got a lot of hot news for you on today's show. The county is making plans for a major revitalization of the Campo Road Corridor in Casa de Oro in Spring Valley, and we'll have details on just what the transformation could include. We'll also have information on a missing woman at risk whose purse was found in La Mesa and whose car was seen in both Lemon Grove and La Mesa after she failed to show up at the airport to pick up a family member. Earth Day activities are planned in county parks across our region. Find out how you can get involved to plant trees, celebrate, and learn how to make your community more sustainable. Law enforcement agencies across San Diego County will no longer be investigating their own officer-involved shootings under a landmark new partnership just announced. On Crime Beat, hear about a wild chase that ensued after a suspect carjacked an El Cajon Police Department vehicle with SWAT gear and weapons inside. Plus, we have some good news about a girl kidnapped from a Spring Valley school who has been found safe. The Biden administration has rolled back pandemic Title 42 restrictions at the border, allowing some migrants to enter the U.S. and make asylum claims. If you've fallen behind on your mortgage payments due to the pandemic, California has a mortgage relief program that may help, and we'll have details on today's show. We'll also have a health warning about raw oysters contaminated with norovirus. The county has announced an expansion of library hours, ending cutbacks due to the pandemic. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with Undersheriff Kelly Martinez. She's also a candidate running for sheriff, and if elected, she would be the first woman to hold the county's top law enforcement job. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some national and international news headlines today, including Russia's latest nuclear threat, a rise in interest rates, and more. If you're a senior citizen in need of tech help, we've got some good news for you about a new tech tank at Oasis in Grossmont Center, offering assistance on how to use everything from cell phones and tablet computers to ride-sharing and music apps. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Could Casa de Oro become East County's version of the gas lamp or Little Italy? That may sound grandiose, but the county is planning a dramatic transformation of the Campo Road corridor through Casa de Oro in Spring Valley with a vision to create a Main Street ambience in the heart of the community. On April 22nd, the County Planning Commission will hold a hearing on the proposed Campo Road Revitalization Specific Plan, which covers 60 acres centered on Campo Road from Rogers Road to Granada Avenue. A central plaza for outdoor community activities, roundabouts, bike and pedestrian-friendly changes, trees, outdoor seating, new street parking, more retail shops, outdoor dining opportunities, and covered verandas for shoppers are all part of the revitalization plan. The plan would also allow up to four-story buildings to create housing with density bonuses, a dramatic change from the one- and two-story structures currently along Campo Road. The new construction would be made possible by allowing building closer to the street by using the 100-foot existing right-of-ways. Casa de Oro means House of Gold, but in recent years the area has been anything but golden. The community has struggled with run-down and vacant buildings, illegal marijuana dispensaries, crime problems, and a lack of community character. The plan also calls for creation of a large community gathering space where outdoor events and special programs can be held, a goal voiced by many residents in community meetings on the plan. A series of smaller open spaces will also be added to provide shade, seating, and rest areas for shoppers, dog walkers, parents with children, and others. New gateway signage is also planned to herald entry to the revitalized Casa de Oro community. If approved by planners and ultimately the County Board of Supervisors, the plan would be completed in three phases. The improvements could be funded through grants, government programs, creation of a planned business improvement district, and by attracting private investors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery with a missing persons bulletin. San Diego police seek help to locate Nicole Marie Perret, a Pacific Beach woman who vanished without picking up a family member at the airport on Monday, April 11th. Her car, a white Audi A5, was last seen April 11th in La Mesa and Lemon Grove, and her purse was found in La Mesa. She is considered at risk due to the circumstances. Her family told police she has never gone missing before. Nicole Perret is 32 years old with blonde hair and brown eyes. She is 5 feet 2 inches tall and weighs about 130 pounds. Anybody with information is urged to please call San Diego Police at 619-531-2000. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. Grocery store employees, represented by 7 UFCW locals in Southern and Central California, have overwhelmingly voted to ratify a new 3-year contract, averting a potential strike at Ralph's, Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilion stores. This new agreement covers over 47,000 supermarket workers represented by UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. The deal includes wage increases of $4.25 an hour over the 3-year contract for most workers, and some classifications will receive higher pay raises. Wage improvements will also apply to about 7,000 food for less workers per last year's agreement negotiated with Kroger. The new deal also improves dental and vision plans, protects pension benefits, and requires that health and safety committees be set up at each grocery store to give workers a say on safety and security issues where they work. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
San Diego is a biodiversity hotspot. The actions of County Parks and Recreation's teams help to safeguard our region's native plants and trees, air and water quality, and unique habitats for hundreds of species. Earth Day provides the perfect opportunity to celebrate these efforts and let residents experience our public spaces where wildlife thrives. Here are some Earth Day events planned in county parks in East County. You can help plant oak trees and other native plants at Flynn Springs County Park on Friday, April 22nd, starting at 5:30 p.m. and on Saturday, April 23rd at 10 a.m. At the Ramona Grasslands Preserve on April 23rd at 10 a.m., the preserve is hosting nature touch tables with pelts, feathers, teeth, and claws to educate visitors about local information. A ranger will be on hand to share trail information, too. At the Barnett Ranch County Preserve in Ramona, a tree planting will be held, along with education on tree care and maintenance, on April 23rd at 10 a.m. You can hike with a ranger to the dam at Lake Morena County Park on April 23rd at 10:30 a.m. through woodland areas and learn about local Native American tribes. At Lamar County Park in Spring Valley, visit with resident birds of prey and help plant new trees to provide shades and habitat on April 23rd at 1 p.m. Find a full list of Earth Day activities at sdparks.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Law enforcement agencies will no longer be investigating themselves when an officer-involved shooting occurs starting May 1st. Recognizing the need for transparent and independent investigations of officer and deputy-involved shootings, members of the San Diego County Chiefs and Sheriffs Association have signed a Memorandum of Understanding which establishes a new countywide protocol for investigations of officer and deputy-involved shootings. The top law enforcement officers aim to build public trust by ensuring that no agencies investigate their own shooting incidents. The announcement came at a press conference on April 13th with Undersheriff Kelly Martinez, San Diego Police Chief David Nislett, Chula Vista Police Chief Roxana Kennedy, and District Attorney Summer Stephen. All police departments in San Diego County have signed the agreement, including all local police departments as well as police departments of San Diego State, the University of California, Harbor Police, and the Sheriff's Department, as well as the County Probation Department. The Sheriff's Department will investigate shootings involving San Diego Police Department. The San Diego Police Department will investigate shootings involving sheriff's deputies, as well as those involving other local law enforcement agencies, such as El Cajon and the La Mesa Police in East County. If a shooting involves both the Sheriff's Department and the San Diego Police, then the Chula Vista Police Department will handle the investigation. The San Diego County District Attorney's Office will continue to review all shootings once the investigation by the primary investigative agency is completed. Undersheriff Kelly Martinez calls the change an important and fundamental shift to assure that investigators are independent and unbiased. She adds, "We are proud to be part of this new agreement with our partner law enforcement agencies and to provide accurate information about these incidents by instilling trust between our agencies and the communities we serve." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A suspect accused of carjacking an El Cajon police vehicle containing SWAT gear and weapons on April 13th has been apprehended after leading officers on a high-speed chase across East County that ended in Chula Vista. An off-duty ECPD officer was leaving a 7-Eleven store in Santee when a man opened the passenger door of the unmarked pickup truck, got into the vehicle, and started yelling incoherently at the driver, says Sergeant Michael Gonzalez with the Sheriff's Department. Both men got out of the truck, but the carjacker got behind the wheel and drove away. Around midnight, several hours after the carjacking, officers spotted the truck in Lakeside, but when they tried to conduct a vehicle stop, the carjacker sped onto Interstate 8 West. A pursuit ensued, reaching speeds over 100 miles an hour. The chase was joined by the sheriff's helicopter as it raced through La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Spring Valley on State Routes 94 and 125 before the suspect ultimately crashed into a fire hydrant near the Otay Ranch Mall. The carjacker fled on foot. Sheriff's deputies and police officers surrounded him and ordered him to surrender, but he refused and a taser was deployed. The suspect, David Alejandro Felix, suffered minor injuries from the crash. He faces charges of carjacking, assault on a peace officer, car theft, possessing a stolen vehicle, and felony evading arrest. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. 6-year-old Jolynn Gutierrez has been found unharmed. Her mother, Wendy Gutierrez, who does not have custody, has been arrested for kidnapping Jolynn on February 22nd from Kempton Elementary School in Spring Valley. Mexican authorities located the mother and daughter and turned them over to the U.S. Marshals Service at the San Ysidro Port of Entry on April 13th. The Sheriff's Department has coordinated with County Child Welfare Services to reunite Jolynn with her maternal grandparents, says Lieutenant Chris Steffen. Wendy Gutierrez has been booked in the Las Colinas Detention and Reentry Facility in Santee on charges of kidnapping and abducting a child. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
At the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020, the Trump administration began expelling migrants without access to asylum hearings under Title 42. Now, after lifting most other pandemic mandates, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control has announced that suspending migrants' rights is no longer necessary due to the current public health conditions as well as increased availability of vaccines and treatments. The action comes after Ukrainian and Russian refugees began turning up at the U.S.-Mexico international border, fleeing the war in Ukraine and persecution in Russia. But the policy will apply to all migrants seeking asylum. Title 42 was used to expel over 1.7 million migrants in the past 2 years, Associated Press reports. Title 42 will be lifted starting May 23rd. After that, the Border Patrol will go back to processing anyone found crossing the border, as it always has in the past, a Border Patrol official told Voice of America. So a migrant who crosses the border between points of entry illegally can still be removed without access to an immigration court. But if migrants arrive at the border and claim asylum, they will be interviewed by an asylum officer. If the migrant passes a credible fear screening due to dangers in their homeland that they fled from, the migrants will be allowed a hearing in immigration court. If their claims are found not credible, they can be deported, but if asylum is granted, they can stay in the U.S. Ed Cifuentes with the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU Foundation of San Diego and Imperial Counties, praised the action. He says, under the guise of public health, the policy has unlawfully stripped people fleeing from danger of the right to seek asylum by expelling them without due process. Congressman Juan Vargas, a Democrat who represents San Diego's border areas, calls the change a welcome step and says, Title 42 was never about public health and safety. It was implemented to deny due process to people seeking refuge and protection, Times of San Diego reports. But Congressman Dial Issa, a Republican, disagrees. He calls the action a reckless decision that he believes would cause a flood of additional illegal immigrants. Several Republicans in Congress have sought to tie any lifting of Title 42 to first ending the national COVID-19 public health emergency declaration, then notifying Congress and waiting an additional 60 days for any rollback. While lifting Title 42 would restore rights of asylum seekers with credible fear claims to have court hearings to potentially be granted asylum, it would also make it riskier for migrants who try to cross the border illegally. Title 42 lifted legal consequences for migrants crossing between border stations by allowing expulsion without other consequences. But ironically, with legal channels to seek asylum blocked for many during the past 2 years, Title 42 has resulted in a 30% increase in repeated border crossings, according to U.S. Customs and Patrol data, Voice of America reports. Congressman Vargas says the Biden administration has a plan ready to manage the border policy changes. He says he looks forward to working with federal agencies, local governments, and nonprofits to ensure migrants seeking refuge in our country are given the due process they deserve. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Many Californians are unaware that the state is offering help for those struggling to pay their mortgages due to the COVID-19 pandemic. On April 26th, from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., a webinar will be held on the California Mortgage Relief Program. The event, open to everyone, is jointly hosted by the California Mortgage Relief Program, Urban League of San Diego County, and Assemblymember Dr. Akilah Weber. A link to register for the April 26th webinar is available on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in the Homes section. Dr. Weber says the United States Department of the Treasury has approved California's plan to provide $1 billion in mortgage relief, providing help to as many as 40,000 struggling homeowners. She adds the California Mortgage Relief Plan is committed to supporting those hit hardest by the pandemic, including homeowners who have fallen behind on their housing payments. The program will help homeowners make past due housing payments up to a maximum of $80,000 per household by making a one-time direct payment to the mortgage servicers. Applications are accepted through an online portal. To apply for help through the program, visit calmortgagerelief.org and click on the Apply Now button. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Marie Johnson.
This is Elijah McKee with a health alert. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control are investigating a multi-state outbreak of norovirus illnesses linked to raw oysters that were widely distributed nationwide, including in California. The public and restaurants are being warned not to buy, serve, or consume raw oysters harvested in British Columbia, Canada, anytime this year. Norovirus symptoms usually develop within 2 days after exposure. It can cause fever, headache, body aches, vomiting, and diarrhea, which can lead to dehydration. Children under age 5, the elderly, and people with weakened immune systems are most at risk of severe infections. If you've purchased any Canadian oysters, throw them out. Quick steaming processes that are often used for cooking shellfish may not heat foods enough to kill noroviruses. Food preparation surfaces and food cutting utensils that may have come in contact with the potentially contaminated oysters should be thoroughly cleaned. If you have become ill after eating possibly contaminated raw oysters, talk to your healthcare provider or visit the CDC's Norovirus Treatment page.
This is Marie Johnson with a public service announcement from the San Diego County Library System. There's good news for book lovers, scholars, and other library users. During the pandemic, local libraries cut back on their hours, but now all of San Diego County's 33 community branch libraries are expanding their hours starting April 11th. The 6 largest county libraries will now be open 7 days a week. That includes the branch libraries in El Cajon, Encinitas, La Mesa, Poway, San Marcos, and Vista. All 33 branches will also include evening hours. The new hours are posted on signs at each of the libraries and can be found online at the San Diego County Library's website at sdcl.org.
San Diego County is one of 7 California counties participating in CalScope. That's a study that will help public health professionals better understand how many people in California have antibodies against COVID-19. The state's Department of Public Health has randomly selected about 45,000 San Diego households to participate in this study. If your household was selected, you should have received or be receiving an invitation with a unique access code to sign up online or over the phone. You'll be asked to complete an anonymous survey and a free at-home COVID-19 antibody test using a finger prick blood sample. Each participant will receive a gift card for completing the survey and another one for returning the blood test sample. The study will help the state and local health departments monitor the COVID-19 pandemic and refine strategies to protect the health of Californians. For more information about CalScope, you can visit the study website at calscope.org. This has been a public service announcement for the County of San Diego and the California Department of Public Health.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Marie Johnson with the Green Scene Report. Would you like to be part of creating your own special garden where monarch butterflies can thrive? You're invited to learn more on Saturday, April 30th at 1 p.m. at the Alpine Town Hall, also known as the Alpine Women's Club Building. Milkweed is the only plant that the monarchs can lay their eggs on. Without milkweed, the monarchs cannot reproduce. In the past year, monarchs have declined by 90% due to pesticides and development. The speakers at the April 30th program will be Carlette Anderson, Director of Alpine's Community Wildlife Habitat Program, and John Green, former Director of the Backcountry Land Trust. Anderson says, with your help, we can help the monarch butterflies lay their eggs in your garden. Milkweed plants will be available for purchase at the program. If you are unable to attend and would like to order milkweed plants, you can call John Green at 619-504-8181. That number again is 619-504-8181.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ. And today, my very special guest is Kelly Martinez. She is the first female undersheriff in the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. Now she's running for sheriff to fill the vacancy left by the retirement of longtime Sheriff Bill Gore. She's spent 37 years in the department, where she started the Sheriff's Homeless Assistance Resource Team, the marijuana enforcement teams, and helped manage the department's responses through some turbulent times, the pandemic, civil unrest, and more. She says she's committed to investing to improving public safety and jail safety, as well as filling critical staffing shortages. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's great to be here.
So why don't you start? I've talked a little bit about your bio, but if you could tell our audience about your most relevant experiences and your top goals if you're elected.
Yes, absolutely. As you said, I've been with the Sheriff's Department for 37 years. My entire time has been with the Sheriff's Department in law enforcement. I've risen through the ranks, and I'm currently the undersheriff, which is the COO of the organization. I run the day-to-day operations of the Sheriff's Department.
Very important.
It's a big job. It's a $1.1 billion organization is our budget, and we have 4,200 square miles of public safety area that we cover in the county of San Diego, as well as 9 contract cities, all of the jails and the courthouses.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, but I know that I've got a lot of experience, and I've been doing this for a long time, so I'm really excited. I'm very passionate about San Diego County, as well as the Sheriff's Department. So I decided to run for sheriff, and right now I have 3 main priorities. The first one is to hire more staff, as most law enforcement agencies in the nation are suffering from, you know, workforce shortages. So
sure. I think most businesses in general, it isn't just law enforcement. It's kind of a post-pandemic or late pandemic phenomenon. I think that a lot of people are just doing other things, not going back into the workforce.
Yeah, for sure. And so we're trying to figure out the way to best attract quality workers to the Sheriff's Department. And we need, you know, so the 2 really hard to fill positions for us are deputies and healthcare workers for our jails, which are 2 of the hardest to find, workers in America right now, I think so.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the jail situation, which is one of the biggest issues in the race. San Diego County, as you know, has had the most jail deaths of any major county in California. I think it's over 209 or around 209 since 2006, and that includes several this year. A state audit found the number to be so high that it actually recommended legislative reforms. Kelly, what steps are you committed to taking to reduce the number of jail deaths, including, I might add, the high number of suicides there, beyond what's been done in the past that obviously hasn't been enough?
Yeah, it hasn't been enough, as you said, and I fully embrace the audit. I'm really grateful for all of the work that the state auditors did. We worked with them when they were here in San Diego, and in February, as you know, that audit came out. It was pretty scathing, I think, as a couple of reporters have said, which I completely agree with, but we're doing a lot. We're investing in the jails. We haven't invested enough in the jails in probably at least a decade. So infrastructure. We've committed to spend $30 million to redo and renovate the George Bailey Detention Facility this year. Hopefully that project will start in June or July. So that will help a lot as far as getting a newer facility. It'll be a safer facility for the deputies and for the individuals in our custody.
Good.
I started, I don't want to catch you off. There's so many things that we're doing. I started the wireless improvement project in the jails, which will do a lot of things. Improving the wireless connectivity in the jails will help with our healthcare system. It'll connect all of our healthcare data and computers to each other. Right now, they don't all talk to each other. So a psychiatrist might not know what another doctor has done, or also the connectivity to the community care system. So understanding what an individual's healthcare history was in the community before they come into our custody is really important. We're moving towards having medical and mental health care assessments for every individual at intake, and that'll be a hands-on assessment, which will be really important. Right now, we do it. It takes a week or more to get that assessment done, which is too long. A lot of that's going to hinge on being able to hire the healthcare workers that we need and the mental health assessors that we need. I implemented the body-worn camera program in our jails, which is really important because it's starting already to de-escalate situations. Having folks on camera really changes the way that they behave, I think, in some
circumstances. I imagine so. I would think both the prisoners and the deputies, if they know somebody's watching, you're less apt to have, a bad situation. Makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's been, and it's been really well received by our staff where we've piloted it at Las Colinas. We're hoping to move it to the men's jail next. And a lot of that's going to be part of the wireless project. We have to have better wireless connectivity to be able to implement all of those cameras, but we're moving in that direction and we have the money set aside.
Very good.
There's just a lot of things. The medically assisted treatment program that we're starting where we can help with drug addiction. Substance use is a huge problem in society, but also for the people that come into our custody. So,
especially with fentanyl, I think according to the DEA, that fentanyl deaths are up 888% or something like that in recent years here. It's just very alarming. Kelly, beyond the jail situation, I think if we ask the average person on the streets out there, they're always going to say, what are you going to do to reduce crime, especially violent crime? And I might add human trafficking, which really seems to have a hub, unfortunately, in parts of East County like Spring Valley and Lemon Grove.
Yeah, so the Human Trafficking Task Force was started a number of years ago. I was lucky enough to be one of the first lieutenants that sat on that. It oversaw that unit along with Summer Steffen when she was a DDA at the time. And so it's been a passion of all of ours for a long time in San Diego County. So we're working aggressively to stop that, to educate folks about what to look for, because I don't think everyone always understands what a human trafficking victim might look like. Yeah. And, it's not just sex trafficking. There's a lot of human slavery, frankly, that goes on with people, in certain industries where they are working long hours. They're brought here to this country by people they don't speak the language. And so they aren't being paid the wages they should be paid and all of those types of things. So, but yes, public safety is on everyone's mind right now. You certainly see it all the time in the news. The concerns about violent crime, the guns, we are seeing more guns all the time. The ghost gun problem.
We can jump ahead if you want. I had a question further down on guns, but I did want to ask what your views are about guns and striking that balance to keep, to reduce gun violence and deal with issues like ghost guns, while at the same time, respecting maybe the need of those who may want to get a carry, a concealed carry permit for self-defense purposes.
Yeah, it certainly is a balance. And it's really a balance between lawful gun ownership and those who are really bent to do harm to other people and have guns for the wrong purposes. Right. The ghost guns are primarily, they're unregistered weapons that are easy for offenders who should not have guns and who are prohibited from having guns possessed, and they use them for criminal means, where the concealed carry weapon, the CCW permits that you're talking about, those are issued by the sheriff. I believe in issuing those, having a good process for that. We've fixed our process for the CCW permits. It was taking almost 2 years to get a first appointment.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit under Sheriff Gore on that where gun rights advocates had sued, claiming they didn't think he was issuing enough of those permits. And I guess ultimately that was resolved by the court. But, you know, just wanted to ask you if you had a comment on that. Let's move on. On your website, you talk about supporting certain alternatives to law enforcement responses in some cases. You have been working with the county to implement mobile crisis response teams and crisis stabilization units, which I guess are clinics for mental health. But so far, those are only in North County. So I'm wondering, how well are those teams and the centers working out? And what are the odds of getting a similar center out here in East County?
Yeah, well, the odds are really good. We're working towards that and working towards one down in South Bay. The second one up in North County opened recently, and they've just been having hundreds of people that have been not only walk-ins, community walk-ins that go and get care at the crisis stabilization unit, but also drop-offs for law enforcement, which take about 10 or 15 minutes and put deputies and officers back out on the street doing the other work that they need to be doing. So they've been terrific. They've been welcomed. The hard part, again, is finding those healthcare workers and those mental health clinicians that can work in those facilities. So, but I know there are plans to bring them to both South County and East County. So,
very good. I would also like to ask what can be done to improve trust in law enforcement after the recent racial justice protests nationally and locally drew attention to racial profiling and use of force issues in minority communities. And I might add, you know, we've seen these issues locally in places like Santee and Lakeside, where there would be sometimes arrests of protesters for things like curfew. And yet, even when violence against protesters was shown on videos with, say, white supremacist type groups out there beating up and assaulting people, they didn't get arrested. So I would like to ask, what would you do to improve the trust in the community, especially in these areas where minorities have tended to feel very marginalized, like say Santee and Lakeside?
Yeah, I think it's really important. We need to trust our communities in order for them to trust us. I think that it kind of goes both ways, and we really need to have those conversations. But beyond conversations, we need to have action and fair treatment. And so I really do encourage that. I encourage our sergeants and our supervisors to constantly look at the bodywork camera footage, see what the interactions look like with our deputies, make sure they're on track, the training that we provide, as well as, you know, our screening process when we hire people. It's really important that we have a good idea of who we're hiring.
Okay. I would like to talk about the changes recently in access to scanner traffic, which is something that directly affects us. You may not be familiar, but we run the East County Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. I know you've said you're committed to transparency and you've done a lot toward putting more data and things on the website. But as background to this for the audience out there, in January, just before Sheriff Gore retired, the state had passed a law which required that private information not be broadcast over scanners, which I think everyone would agree is appropriate. The problem is that while some agencies like San Diego Police decided to only encrypt privacy data and kept everything else public, the Sheriff's Department did the opposite and took everything onto private channels. And so the upshot of that, Kelly, is we've been unable to alert the public because we don't know about it, about things like the escaped prisoner recently at Grossmont Hospital, running around, you know, near a shopping mall, near a trolley stop, near apartment buildings, near a hospital. And yet we were kept in the dark, as was other media. Same with things like high-speed chases, chasing suspects through neighborhoods, and potentially during fires. You know, we often hear on scanners where the sheriff may suddenly announce that a road is blocked by fire or that they're going out to shut down a flooded roadway during flash flood. So my question to you is, given that the sheriff does have, you know, they already can move things onto a secure channel when, say, there's a SWAT action, would you commit to restore the public and media access to listen to everything that's not, you know, required to be encrypted for privacy reasons? And do we have to wait until you're elected to do that? Or is that something we can get started on right away to protect the public safety?
Well, I completely agree with you. The media and the public need to know what's going on in their area, and they need to know as quickly as they can so that they can take action. Quickly on the escapee, he never got anywhere near any shopping malls or anything. He barely made it out of the hospital because he injured himself when he fell. But aside from that, if that were the case, you absolutely should have known that there was a dangerous situation if there was one. We this weekend unveiled, and I hope you'll get online and look at it, a live CAD where you can look at what's occurring in any area. It'll tell you what incidents we are responding to. And it says in plain language, not in police code, so you can understand what, if it's a rape or it's an assault or what it is, the 100 block of where it's occurring. And we just rolled it out this weekend. There'll be a press release coming out today.
That's all really good. My question on that, though, is most media today, us included, don't have the resources to dispatch a reporter out to every single scene. So being able to actually listen in real time on scanners to what's happening is super important, not just knowing that you're responding to a burglary or a rape or whatever it is, but what's happening. You know, is someone fleeing? Is there a public danger, which is where we get involved? I'm less concerned, you know, about something else, but when the public safety might be at risk, that's where it becomes critical. I can't tell you how many times I've pulled over when I'm driving and I hear a bunch of sirens go screaming past, to use my cell phone like a scanner, turn on the, you know, Broadcastify or radio reference and see what, there's a multi-car collision. The freeway, the highway is blocked ahead of me. They're getting ready to bring an air ambulance in for someone. It's really, really useful to be able to know those kind of things and not have to run home to your computer and look at what's going on. Although I think it's good that you're adding that, but.
I wasn't quite finished explaining, and you can look it up on your phone, and we will be improving it. And so that these suggestions are very welcome. Because of the security of our system, we weren't immediately able to put a link to the call, but you'll be able to see a link and you'll be able to pull up all of those details of what's going on with the call. We're not there yet. And, you know, the law, as you said, when it passed in January, although we do have more capability than the smaller agencies as far as dispatching, we weren't able to, we didn't believe for officer safety reasons, be able to have our people switch back and forth when they're going to be talking about personal information. So we're still trying to fix that. This is sort of something to bridge in the meantime, but you can certainly take the call number and call our watch commander line, and they'll fill you in on whatever details that you'd like to know.
Yeah, that's helpful. I know a lot of the public listens too. I have members of the public all the time that'll call me up and say, did you know about the fire I just heard about on the scanner, or the whatever, or, you know, hey, the sheriff says they're chasing somebody through my neighborhood. So I'm not always first, you know, if I'm not listening to the scanner that moment. But the nice thing about the scanner software is that you can listen when you're driving, and you can't pull over and be texting and, you know, reading stuff when you're driving.
I understand that it's a passive way to see it, and our Twitter and everything else is not listening. We're trying to improve it. We'd like it to be as easy as possible for everyone, while at the same time being able to maintain our operations and do it safely and protect the information. So we're trying to thread that needle between, you know, the law and what we can do, what we can make work operationally and still provide information, but it's a work in progress. And I hope we'll continue to do better.
That would be great. Thank you. What is your approach to whatever the sheriff's department can do to help reduce homelessness and get help for those that are on the streets? There's been a lot of approaches tried in the past. Tell us about yours.
Yeah. So as I said before, I started the homeless assistance resource team, and we were fully funded for that team by the Board of Supervisors. It's 8 deputies and a sergeant. They work all over the unincorporated San Diego County, and they work in partnership with all of the different non-governmental organizations, as well as the county HHSA and behavioral health, and providing services. They've housed hundreds of people so far. We're struggling right now with some of the homeless population that doesn't necessarily want to be housed.
And we're seeing El Cajon, I know there's an encampment the city keeps complaining about that's where it is at. Yeah. It's, I hate to use the term, but sort of the more hardcore homeless, you know, people that have been offered help, from what I understand, and won't take it. They had a drug overdose. They had a trafficking incident out there. How do you handle that when you have folks that don't want the help or won't accept it?
Well, you know, if they're not committing a crime, the sheriff can't really do much. Just refer them to services and hope that they, you know, that we can get them the help they need. I know that there's a lot of discussion amongst legislators about some conservatorship laws and different things that might help with that. I know that the mayor in San Diego and some other elected officials are trying to build more housing, you know, get more housing built that's low income, middle income. So there's just so much political will right now. I'm hopeful that in the next couple of years, we'll make a lot more progress.
Very good. Let's talk about your approach to illegal marijuana dispensaries, another big problem in East County, especially the unincorporated areas where the legal ones aren't, where there's no such thing as legal ones yet. Tell us about your approach and how successful it's been.
Yeah, so last year, or I guess the year before last, we recognized the need. There were so many unlicensed dispensaries, particularly in our Spring Valley area in East County. It was really creating so much problem. We were having everything, every crime you can imagine, from robberies.
I can hear the shootings from where I live down the street there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What a way. It's a horrible way.
I had a bullet on my driveway.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's a terrible environment for residents of those communities. And a lot of time it's low-income communities that are suffering from this, and people were being victimized. And so we didn't have a very effective approach. So I wanted to dedicate a team to handling those dispensaries, just dedicated a sergeant and a team of detectives, as well as an analyst to help them find those dispensaries and work with those. So they've been very successful. We have zero unlicensed dispensaries in the unincorporated area.
I was going to say, I drive through that area every day and I haven't seen any in a long time. And it used to seem like it was whack-a-mole. You'd see one, I mean, even like right across the street from the sheriff's substation, and it would take weeks or months to shut it down. And 5 minutes later, there'd be another one a block away. So that does seem to be working. So congratulations on that one.
Thanks. And I want to really give kudos to Supervisor Anderson and Chairman Fletcher. They were the ones who provided us the funding, full-time funding for that team. And it's going to continue. Yeah. So as they pop up, they will inevitably pop up again. We'll shut them down and just keep working on them.
Yeah. And I think the county is looking at a framework to allow some legal sales, which may also drive the illegal ones, you know, maybe somewhere else. At least that's what happened, I'm told, in La Mesa. So
yeah,
the verdict is out on that, I guess. Let's talk about response times in rural areas. Some of the places out here, such as Campo and Hacumba, have very slow response times, at least the last time I checked. And admittedly, I haven't looked in the last year or so, but it seems like every couple of years I'll pull the figures. And, you know, it can sometimes be an hour or even more, even for very serious crimes, like where somebody is being, you know, attacked or something. You know, it's to the point that residents out there will tell me they'll often call Border Patrol first, even though it's not really a Border Patrol issue, because they know somebody is going to show up. And the sheriff, from what I understand, doesn't have people stationed there 24/7 overnight. They have to wake somebody up and come in from somewhere else. Can more be done to improve the response times to the taxpayers in rural areas who, after all, are paying, you know, just as much for law enforcement services, but they're really not getting, you know, the help that they need in some cases?
Yeah. So, and you hit the nail on the head. It's a staffing issue, and the unincorporated areas of San Diego County have not, we haven't had the funding for staffing for a long time. Pre-pandemic, I was working towards adding unincorporated staff, and we were successful in doing that in some of our areas. I think the other key, particularly in North County, is we're purchasing some property at 15 and 76 with the eventual build of a station there, which will split the beat in half from a 400 some square mile beat to about 200 square miles, which will make response times much quicker. The problem is when you only have one or two deputies on a beat and one of them gets tied up downtown at the jail or, you know, at the hospital, then we don't have someone available to go to those calls. So my goal is to continue adding unincorporated staff. I think that's really the solution. We've looked at whether the, you know, 24 hours, 7 day a week model with the staffing we have out there is better and will improve response times. It really won't. It's better for us to just have deputies who live on the beat. And if they get woken up in the middle of the night, they respond. It's quicker.
Yeah. All right. Tell us about, let's see, what have we not covered yet? What are some of your endorsements that you are most proud of and would like our audience to know about?
Yeah, I'm proud that I had some very early endorsements from Senator Pro Tem Tony Atkins, Chairman Nathan Fletcher, Mayor Todd Gloria, Mayor Mary Salas. But I also got the endorsement of Sheriff Bill Gore. He believed in me quite a bit and mm-hmm. obviously promoted me throughout my career. I'm proud of his endorsement. The Deputy Sheriff's Association, certainly the rank and file deputies on our department, it's very important to have their support when you're trying to make change and fix and improve things. Also the chiefs and sheriff in the county. I really believe in collaboration for public safety. If we don't work together as a region, as law enforcement, and pool our resources, we're not going to be as effective.
Very good. In general, Kelly, what are some of the areas where you hope to continue and enhance Sheriff Gore's legacy? And on the other side of that, what are the areas where you might hope to take a different approach?
Yeah, well, you know, he created the information-led policing or intelligence-led policing model that we have on our department. Yeah. We have 33 analysts now, crime intelligence analysts. I really think a data-driven, evidence-based approach to law enforcement and public safety is hugely important. I've mm-hmm. always believed in that work, so I'll continue that. Just investments in our jails. As I said, we haven't invested enough in our jails, and that's something that I hope will be my legacy, is creating a better jail environment and for not only our staff, but also for the individuals in our custody.
Very good. We have been speaking with Kelly Martinez, who is the undersheriff for San Diego County, and she's seeking to become San Diego County's first woman sheriff in the upcoming election. The primary is the first Tuesday in June, right? And I guess if nobody gets more than 50%, then there would be a runoff in November. I'm going to let you have the final word today, Kelly. Well, first, let me tell folks where they can get more information at kellymartinezforsheriff.com. What else would you like our audience to know that I may not have asked you about today?
I appreciate this so much, Miriam, and being able to talk with you today. It's been really a wonderful conversation. I'd just like to say that I'm the most experienced and qualified candidate in this race. I'm passionate about San Diego. I'm passionate about public safety and doing the best job we can in the Sheriff's Department. So I hope people will remember that when they go to vote in June and then in November.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Given the setbacks that they've faced so far militarily, none of us can take lightly the threat posed by a potential resort to tactical nuclear weapons or low-yield nuclear weapons.
Acknowledging fears of Russia using nuclear weapons in the Ukraine conflict, CIA Director William Burns said there's no evidence of Russia acting to do so. Ukraine, meanwhile, claims to have sunk a Russian warship. With its $750 million price tag, the loss of Moskva is the largest of the conflict so far. A week after Britain's prime minister pulled off a visit to Ukraine, President Joe Biden confirmed reports the U.S. is sending a top-level official.
We're making that decision now.
Also on Thursday, Biden again blamed the invasion for driving up food and gas prices.
Ukraine and Russia are the one and two largest wheat producers in the world. We're number three. They're shut down. We saw that in yesterday's inflation data.
Prices have risen 8.5% over the past 12 months. Biden called on Congress to pass a bill to help make the U.S. less dependent on foreign supply chains. And with the prime rate inching up, the interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage hit a 10-year high of 5%. Trade groups predict real estate sales to drop 10% this year. A new lawsuit, which aims to become a class action for shareholders, alleges Elon Musk delayed revealing his stake in Twitter in order to purchase shares at a lower price. Musk did not comment on the claim, but noted he's seeking free speech.
Twitter has become kind of the de facto town square. So it's just really important that people have both the reality and the perception that they are able to speak freely within the bounds of the law.
The January 6th committee heard testimony from former Trump senior advisor Stephen Miller, who allegedly encouraged efforts to alter the outcome of the 2020 presidential election.
The election is over. That is the rule of law. That is our constitutional process. Those who refuse to accept the rulings of our courts are at war with the Constitution.
That's Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who supports criminal charges against former President Trump. Not all panel members appear in favor. The Republican National Committee voted to withdraw from the Commission on Presidential Debates, accusing the organization of bias. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a law banning most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy.
This will represent the most significant protections for life that have been enacted in this state in a generation.
The U.S. Supreme Court will soon rule on a similar ban in Mississippi. If approved, Florida's law could proceed as well as a 15-week ban in Arizona. And a second bus of migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. arrived in Washington, D.C. from Texas. The group agreed to the journey as part of Republican Governor Greg Abbott's opposition to the end of Title 42 border expulsions. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The nonprofit San Diego Oasis in Grossmont Center in La Mesa has teamed up with Cox Communications to make technology accessible and affordable for members ages 50 and up. The newly opened Tech Tank at Oasis gives local seniors an opportunity to advance their technology skills and reduce social isolation, all to help bridge the digital divide among older adults. The Tech Tank offers technology classes and workshops, demonstrations, and one-on-one help. The Tech Tank has some services at no charge, such as one-on-one sessions for help with smartphones, tablets, and other devices. And you can choose from over the phone or in person at the Grossmont Center site. Tech demonstrations include how to use voice-controlled TV, streaming services, internet security, and smart home technology. Longer workshops are available for just a few dollars, with hands-on help for everything from how to use mapping apps and photo services to email basics, music streaming apps, Bluetooth use, QR codes, and ride-sharing apps such as Uber and Lyft. In 2020, Cox Communications donated $300,000 to San Diego Oasis to support the creation of the Tech Tank and increase digital literacy among older adults during the COVID-19 pandemic. Research has shown that older adults need technology not only to keep themselves safe and healthy, but also to enhance their lives by keeping them occupied and connected. Studies show that social isolation can be as bad for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day and can cause debilitating health issues in older individuals. So online learning and socialization is also critical for the mental health and well-being of today's seniors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org.